You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here again with our MLB.com D-backs reporter Steve Gilbert. And Steve, the D-backs have made a trade. So something to kind of focus in on a little bit for this podcast, because the hot stove season is off to such a slow start that we're kind of grasping for things to discuss. But we have something, and that is the D-backs adding to their bullpen. They get Brad Boxberger from the Rays for Curtis Taylor, who is in the system, a minor leaguer for the D-backs. But you look at Boxberger, and he's a guy who's battled injuries the last couple of years. But when healthy, he's always been effective. Where do you see him fitting into that D-backs bullpen?
Yeah, Tim, I think he kind of fits what the Diamondbacks under Mike Hazen last year and now again this year looks like. Are going to do when it comes to building a bullpen. They're going to give themselves, try to get a few guys that have late inning experience, as Boxberger did. You mentioned he was their primary closer back in 2015 and saved 41 games, and has battled injuries the last 2 years. So, you know, guys that are coming back either from an injury or from a down year or whatever it might be that they're able to get a bargain on. That's kind of the way they built this bullpen last year, whether it was, you know, signing Jorge De La Rosa, picking up Fernando Rodney, TJ McFarland, some different guys that contributed to their bullpen last year. Seems to be kind of the way they're going to go this year. And Boxberger was a guy the Rays were looking to move because he's likely to make almost $2 million via arbitration this year. The Diamondbacks now gives them some flexibility. Again, how they want to, you know, work that back end of the bullpen. If Fernando Rodney doesn't end up coming back to them in terms of, you know, his demands for a contract coming down, then they've got Archie Bradley that maybe they can use to get some important outs like the Indians do with the big left-hander whose name just absolutely escaped me. And then they come back with Allen in the ninth, so they could maybe do something like that with Boxberger and Bradley. So they're kind of being flexible as to how they want to build that bullpen.
Andrew Miller, just to remind
That's
you.
That's who I'm of thinking name, of. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. I had a little brain cramp there.
No, absolutely. With all the names, it definitely happens. You look at Boxberger's numbers. He's only 29 years old. Seems like he's been around for a long time, but still on this side of 30. 4-4 last year, 3.38 ERA. He did have 40 strikeouts and 20 and a third innings, so that's a good number. He missed the first half of the season, basically. But you look at the late season stuff, and he was tremendous down the stretch. His last nine appearances, a 0.96 ERA, just one earned run over 9 1/3 innings. You mentioned that he was the closer in 2015, so he's a guy that can handle those pressure spots. And it seems like to me they don't give up a whole lot in Curtis Taylor to get him. It's a great move. Basically, you're helping out a Rays team that obviously has to get rid of money, but you're able to bring in talent. It's a good move for the D-backs. All right, one thing that comes from that, I think, though, is that it's one more player that is eligible for arbitration. And wow, there's a whole lot of them right now. 15 is the number, right, for the D-backs?
Yeah, 15. They just added one, so now they're at 15. And I was talking with Mike Hazen about that the other day, and he said, you know, that's probably the biggest class he's faced, certainly in Arizona, but also probably going back to his Boston years too. It speaks to kind of the young talent that they've had kind of coming up through this system, and that the young players that they've acquired, that they have this many. Now, there are a few that could be possible non-tender guys when the deadline rolls around on Friday, whether that's J.J. Hoover or Chris Herman, depending on, you know, what direction they decide to go. But for the most part, those guys they're going to, you know, try to work to find some deals with those guys. And obviously, you know, most teams nowadays avoid arbitration, and certainly the Diamondbacks don't want to have 14 or 15 arbitration cases to be preparing for in the month of January. That could get pretty busy for them.
Now, different teams have different philosophies when it comes to arbitration. Obviously, there's the teams that once the numbers are in, they will refuse to negotiate anymore. And then some teams more than others like to work out those multiple-year deals so you don't have to worry about it down the stretch. Is that something with this many guys? Obviously, you have 15 guys eligible this year. I don't think you want to go next year and have a similar situation. So do you think they'd really try to work out some multi-year deals with a good number of these guys to avoid a sequel in a year?
Sure, I think they could try with some of these guys that they might feel are core guys, whether it's a Robbie Ray or Jake Lamb. Those are a couple of names that jump out to me as guys that they might want to think about. It's also possible maybe they do something with Shelby Miller, who's coming back from Tommy John surgery, to kind of give him more of an incentive laced deal. There's different ways they can get creative with that. Taiwan Walker's another guy that maybe they might look at for a multi-year deal. So it really also, I'm sure they're discussing some of these guys in trades, to try to move possibly some guys to free up some financial flexibility. But, it's going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out this winter for them.
Some good news for the D-backs on the injury side of things. Follow-up MRI for Randall Delgado, and it showed some improvement. His season ended back on July 16th. He had played well up to that point in 26 games. He had a 3.59 ERA for this team. He had the platelet-rich plasma injection in September, and it seems like that's working.
Yeah, it's a good sign for them because Delgado is kind of one of those underrated contributors last year to their team. He was able to both start and relieve for them. Five starts, able to give the rotation a break occasionally. Pitched well out of the bullpen. He pitched as many as three innings at a time out of the bullpen, and also was called in at times to get one hitter out. So he showed a tremendous amount of flexibility, and I think that's really, when they lost him, that really put a little bit of a strain on the bullpen because he was kind of their jack of all trades down there and somebody who always bounced back really quickly and was always able to pitch in a variety of roles. So I think they very much missed him down the stretch last year.
So what's the schedule from here for him? Is it the thought that he will be ready to go come spring training, or is he going to be delayed in getting ready?
They're certainly cautiously optimistic about that. They'll know more when he starts throwing, and they're going to have him do that at the normal time he would for preparing for spring training, which is probably just after Christmas time, Mike Hazen said. So they'll know more once he actually gets on the mound and once he starts playing catch and starts throwing a little bit more. So right now, I guess you'd say they're cautiously optimistic that he'll be okay for next year.
So the big name around baseball this offseason, obviously there's Giancarlo Stanton on the trade front, but then it's Shohei Ohtani, of course, the great two-way player out of Japan. He can hit home runs, he can throw 102 miles per hour, and he is coming to Major League Baseball. And in theory, every team kind of has a chance because from a financial standpoint, it's not going to cost a lot relative. $20 million will go to his team in Japan, and then it's international bonus money, so depending on how much teams have left, the most is I think the Yankees and Rangers have a little over $3 million. So in theory, every team has a chance of wooing Ohtani to their city. The D-backs would obviously be an outside shot, I think, but if there was a pitch to be made by the D-backs to get Shohei Ohtani, what do you think that would be?
Well, I think it kind of dovetails a little bit with what Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello said at the end of last year, that they're trying to make Arizona a destination place for players, and by that they're talking about they played up some of the benefits to playing in Arizona, such as the spring training facility that they have, the fact that player could live in Phoenix and not have to travel for spring training or during the regular season. Travel for home games, obviously, and that's a tremendous benefit. Obviously, the quality of life and the weather out here is pretty good, especially during the off season. And when it comes to Torrey Lovello and kind of the culture that he's trying to build in the clubhouse, and everyone talked about what a great communicator he is, and how he treats the players. I think they're looking at that as a selling point. And certainly, they've beefed up their analytics. And they've got a lot of different ways to help players when it comes to things like that, and that's important in this day and age. You heard Justin Verlander talk about when he went over to the Astros, all the wealth of information that they provided for him that really helped him. So I think those are the kind of selling points that they would probably make to Ohtani. They, as you said, are probably a long shot for him. They only have about $700,000, I believe, in bonus money. To offer, but I think they'll probably try to make a case that the quality of life and his ability to stay at home year round would be a big benefit for him.
All right, to wrap things up, I want some bold predictions, Steve, for this offseason, since it really still hasn't gotten going, so there's still time to get some big moves in. These aren't things that you think will actually happen this offseason, but just predictions for some crazy things the D-backs could do in theory that would really grab some headlines.
All right, so I'll give you two, and they're kind of combined into one.
Sure.
And again, like I said, not saying this is going to happen, but you asked for something that's bold, that is possible, but highly unlikely. I would say the Diamondbacks find a taker for Zach Greinke and his all the money left on his deal, and they use that savings then to turn around and become a surprise bidder for J.D. Martinez and bring him back as their outfielder and cleanup hitter again. So that would be my bold prediction.
Wow, I like that. What would that do for the pitching staff then, though, without Greinke at the front end? Is there enough depth there
that's a great question that you ask. And I think that's kind of where you get into when you're trying to make room for JD financially. Where do you do it? And you know, are you taking away too much on one end to, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, and how hard would that be? So I think that would definitely leave a hole in the rotation, and they would have to go out and find another pitcher for sure.
All right, great bold prediction. I like that one. That'll do it for this one. This has been MLB.com Extras D-backs edition. For Steve Gilbert, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here with Chris Haft, our MLB.com Giants reporter. And Chris, this is a hot stove season that really promises to be intriguing at some point. We're not quite there yet because we're being held up by a couple of big-time players in Giancarlo Stanton and, of course, all the trade rumors around him, and Shohei Ohtani, who's going to be coming over from Japan. The window to talk to and sign him expected to start on Friday when the league officially puts into place the new plan with Japan and the Players Association and Major League Baseball. So the good news for Giants fans, I guess, is they could be involved in both of those big players when things officially shake down. Let's start with Stanton. We've already talked about him, of course, on this podcast. He's a guy that the Giants have targeted, and they seem to still very much be alive in the sweepstakes. Now, Stanton this week gave a list of teams to the Marlins that he would okay a trade to. Reportedly, the Dodgers are at the top of that list, so that's not good for Giants fans, of course. Dodgers don't seem that interested. So when you look at the situation now and how things have slowly developed over the last week or two, Chris, are we basically where we've been, or are the Giants making some inroads in trade discussions?
Tim, I think we are where we've been. By now it's to the point where any packages of players that the Giants have offered and other teams have offered, I think the Marlins know pretty much who they're going to get back from the handful of interested teams. So now it's a matter of money. So if anybody's willing to take, whether somebody's willing to take all of Stanton's salary, 295 or 75 million left?
Yeah, 95.
You know, so at this point it gets to be a money thing. So, and of course, you know, the acquiring team, yeah, they want Stanton, but they also want to acquire as little of that small fortune as possible. So I think that's where talks are now. I'm sure they'll intensify heading into Orlando and the WHERE meetings, which begin December 10th or 11th. I guess teams arrive on the 10th and the hoo-ha will start on the 11th. And so, this will be a pressure-packed 2 weeks, most of it developing behind the scenes.
Obviously, bringing in Stanton would almost assuredly keep the Giants over the luxury tax. They'd have to pay that big bill. But an interesting story you have up on the website is the fact that while, yes, 2018, this would be a huge hit financially, depending on how much of that contract they would take on, slowly over the years, maybe it's less and less of a factor as other players go off the books.
Yeah, let's also factor it's the average annual value that goes against the competitive balance tax. And with Stanton's tag being quote-unquote only $25 million, over time, it's something the Giants probably could shoulder. And if they made a deal or two here it might become, you know, really manageable. So, yeah, the money maybe isn't as daunting a factor as you might think just at first glance.
It sounded at first like the Cardinals were really making that big initial push, and then there's been reports that maybe the Giants have become the front runners, and you haven't heard a lot about the other teams. Of course, the Red Sox were a team rumored to be interested, and Dave Dombrowski tends to be more of a quiet until he strikes kind of general manager, and he's not afraid to pull the trigger on a big move. But I mean, when you look at things right now, if the Marlins are set on moving Stanton at some point, you would think the Giants are probably on his list as a West Coast team, as a team that he would, if it came to it, accept a trade to. Do you feel like Giants fans have reason to be optimistic at this point?
Sure, they have reason to be optimistic. I think there's a chance he'll come here, but I sure wouldn't be presumptuous just to say he's the Giants are the favorites to land. And I know at some point, at some junctures during this offseason, several of my counterparts have said that the Giants are favorites. And, well, look at what's happened. Nothing. So, I mean, figuring what kind of package of players the Giants are offering the Marlins in return, I've got to believe other teams can, you know, figure out ways to offer more, you know, better packages than what the Giants can. So that's what leaves me skeptical.
Yeah, and of course, he does have to accept the trade. So that's one thing that maybe helps the Giants on the West Coast. We will certainly see. And this should continue to be interesting. Doesn't seem like it's going to get settled real soon. You said it, as we get close to the winter meetings and into the winter meetings in Orlando, Florida, things could really heat up when all those teams are in one place, and we'll see if something big goes down in Orlando. All right, the other big name is Shohei Ohtani, coming over from Japan. Of course, he's the Babe Ruth of Japan. He has a power bat, which obviously the Giants could use, and he has, by most scouts' accounts, frontline, top-of-the-rotation type stuff on the mound. On top of that, he's only 23 years old. And he's not going to cost a lot of money. It'll be $20 million to his team in Japan, and then a minimal bonus, and then he'll go into the regular international program where it'll be 3 years of team, 6 years of team control, including the 3 years of arbitration. So every team in Major League Baseball wants in on the Ohtani situation. Some teams are better set up than others. When you look at the Giants, how do you think they kind of stack up against other teams at this point?
Not very well, Tim. hate to sound like just throwing cold water on everything, but because of that, the posting stuff that's going to start on with the postings that are going to start on, I guess, on Friday, December 1st. I believe those figures are etched in stone, are they not?
The $20 million is etched in stone, and then the amount each team can spend is based on their international bonus pool. So the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Rangers, and the Twins have the most money, but it's all less than, I think the most is $3.5 million. So it's all minimal bonus money.
Yeah. I believe the Giants are at $300,000 or $350,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
So if he's not, it's been said he's not in it for the money. So that's great. Because there's not a whole lot. The Giants don't have that much, you know, are not allowed to offer him that much. I know, we all know good and well, we've been around the team, all know good and well, that they respect his ability and they love his ability, and they think he's going to be a heck of a player. So who knows? Maybe just with other factors, you know, their recent run of championships, the fact that this is such a cosmopolitan area, the ballpark, maybe he takes a look at that and decides, well, San Francisco might be right for me, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and it seems like because, as you said, he said the money doesn't matter, and it's clear that that's true, because if the money was the most important thing to Ohtani, he could wait two more years and basically be a free agent and sign for, who knows, $200 million with the team. So it's clear he wants to compete at the major league level as soon as possible. So it almost feels like rather than a typical Major League Baseball player coming over and being wowed with dollars, this is almost going to be like a college recruiting trip where teams just want to sell the program, sell the campus, and everything like that. And I think it's kind of cool because it's not something you see much in Major League Baseball where more often than not the dollar wins out.
Right. The Ohtani people want presentations both in English and Japanese, so nothing gets, pardon the expression, to use a cliche, nothing gets lost in translation. So that's great. I mean, more power to him. He is an exciting talent, and good luck to whichever team gets him. I just don't think it's going to be the Giants, unfortunately for them.
All right, so negative news on the Ohtani front, which is to be expected, but still some hope as far as Giancarlo Stanton goes. The Giants certainly very much in the mix, if nothing else, on Stanton as they try to add that big bopper to the middle of the lineup. Great stuff as always, Chris. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Giants edition. For Chris Haft, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Welcome into another Padres podcast. Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Padres reporter, A.J. Casavell. And, A.J., the big story, or one of big two stories, really, in the hot stove season right now is Shohei Ohtani, along with Giancarlo Stanton. But every team seems like, in some way or another, they have some kind of outside chance and reason for fans to dream that they could be the team that lands people have nicknamed the Babe Ruth of Japan. Of course, Ohtani, the great arm. He could be a top-of-the-rotation type of pitcher. He can also bash home runs, and people have given him a 65 or 70 power rating on the 20 to 80 scale. So he's a two-way player, and financially, he's not going to cost a ton. You have to pay $20 million to his team in Japan, but after that, it's just international bonus money, and money doesn't seem to be the biggest motivating factor for Ohtani. He just wants to compete at the major league level on a team that he's comfortable with. So because of that, everybody has at least a little chance. What's the Padres' chance?
Well, the Padres' chances aren't great, but it's not a whole lot worse than I think a lot of baseball. I mean, everyone has some sort of chance. The Padres have made a significant investment in Asia and in some of their hirings and their coaching staff and the minor league level. I don't know what effect that would play on Ohtani. But I think it comes down to, for the Padres, don't have a ton of international bonus pool money. They're limited because of their transactions they made last signing period. But Ohtani doesn't. There's other routes for him to make money, it sounds like. So you can just throw the Padres in the pool of all 30 teams in baseball who want to crack at this guy.
You mentioned the front office coaching staff hirings, Hideo Nomo, Takashi Saito. I mean, there's got to be something in that. The fact that these are guys that if Ohtani is to visit with the Padres, I'm sure those are guys that would be in the room.
Absolutely. And it certainly can't hurt is, I guess, what I'm getting at. And I think the Padres probably have a better chance than a handful of teams. But at this point, it's such in the preliminary stages, and the Padres, again, can't offer him as much money as, say, Texas or New York because of their bonus pool limitations, that there are factors that would lead you to believe maybe the Padres have a better chance than some. But I think it's a mystery on the whole right now, but the Padres are probably in the bottom half of the league in terms of where they stand. But again, it's a mystery, and that's part of what makes this whole thing so intriguing. It's so up in the air.
Yeah, nobody really knows what he's looking for, and we'll start to find that out. Coming Friday, that's when the new agreement with Japan and Major League Baseball and the Players Association will be ratified, and then a three-week window opens up for Ohtani to talk to teams and try to figure out where he's going to sign. So it's going to be exciting. It could take a couple of days. It could take the full 3 weeks, but all of baseball will certainly be keeping an eye on that. The Padres have made some transactions. Some teams haven't done that over the last couple of weeks, but they did sign Colton Brewer to a one-year deal. As a 25-year-old, pitched with the Yankees in 2017, double-A, triple-A level. Interesting to me that the Padres gave him a major league deal, and it seems like he fits the mold of an area where the Padres have had success, and that's taking players, I don't want to say off the scrap heap, but players who seem to be on the downside or things aren't going in the right direction, and they've been able to turn guys around and make them into great bullpen assets. Is that the hope for a guy like Brewer?
Yeah, the Padres' professional scouting staff has done a great job finding these kind of these relief pieces who were cast off elsewhere. You look back the last couple of years, I think this move might most closely resemble them signing Ryan Buchter to a major league deal a couple of years ago. I don't think anyone saw any reason for Buchter to be signing a major league deal, except the Padres saw something in him, and now he's a serviceable reliever in Kansas City who helped net the Padres a couple prospects at the trade deadline. And so they also have Brad Hand, Kirby Yates, Craig Stammen, guys who essentially weren't given much of a shot by other teams, but were given a shot by the Padres. And now I think there's maybe 30 teams in baseball who would like to have those kind of relief arms in their bullpen. And so while I can't speak to – I don't know a whole lot about Colton Brewer yet. I haven't yet to see him pitch. I think there's plenty of upside in what the Padres scouting department has done when it comes to finding relief arms, to the point where I think fans can trust that this move might pay off.
It's been a quiet offseason pretty much for everybody, as I mentioned, so far. So teams still have lots of work to do. When you look at the Padres, one area where there's a lot of work to do is in that starting rotation. You have a story up on Padres.com within the last day or two about that rotation and really focusing in on what the options are, who's there. I guess the one clear-cut spot is Clayton Richard, right? He's going to be starting in this rotation. From there, things get very interesting.
Yeah, Clayton Richard's a lock, and the Padres essentially promised him as much when they signed him to a two-year deal in September, that he'd have a spot at the start of the season. Now, that spot's not guaranteed for the entire season. He's got to perform, but he has a spot in the rotation. I think after Richard, it goes to Luis Perdomo and Denelson Lamet. Those are the two guys who at least from my perspective, they should be in the rotation if the Padres are really committed to building a roster for the future. They need to see what these guys have. They've obviously seen that for a couple years from Perdomo, but this is a huge year in his progression. I think this would probably be the year, if it weren't for the Rule 5 draft, that he would be cracking the major leagues. And so this is the year where he needs to step up. The end of last season, I think the Padres on the whole were not too happy with the steps that he made, because toward the end of the season, he got hit a little harder and didn't necessarily make the adjustments they wanted to see. He's got an off season. And again, this could be his rookie season if it weren't for the Rule 5 draft. It's his third season. He has more experience than most guys. It's time for him to take another step. The Nelson Lamet, he's a rookie he was a rookie last season, who I think the Padres believe could be not maybe an ace, but a top of the rotation, maybe a number two or three starter with the stuff he has. But he has some work to do on his command, and he's got some work to do on adding a third pitch. And so big year for those guys. I would be surprised if they weren't in the rotation, given the way the Padres are trying to construct their roster with one eye on the future.
So that leaves two more roster spots or rotation spots for this team. Are those guys, are those spots they look internally for, or are there two free agents out there that they will try to bring in?
They'll give some internal options a chance. I think one of the biggest question marks with the Padres, maybe the biggest question mark with the Padres, is they have three starting pitchers coming back from injury who did not pitch for them last year. Colin Ray and Robbie Erlin are coming off Tommy John surgery that they had after the 2016 season. Both of them were useful before they went down with their elbow injuries, and they acquired Matt Strom in that Ryan Buchter deal, in the Ryan Buchter, Trevor Cahill, Brandon Maurer deal, who they feel like could be a starter. He could be a reliever. They want to give him that chance, but first they want to make sure he's healthy. So that's three guys who, if two of them perform, all of a sudden you have your rotation filled out. But that's just not the way Major League Baseball works. You need to plan for contingencies. You need to plan for injuries. You need to plan for things not working out. And so I would not be surprised if the Padres went out and signed two to three more starting pitchers who could compete for a spot in spring training.
So what type of starting pitchers on the free agent market? I mean, obviously they're not going to be in on the Yu Darvishes of the world and those guys. It'll be cheaper options. What kind of pitchers do you think they're targeting?
I think you just go back and look at what they did last offseason. Last offseason, they essentially committed to signing pitchers to one-year deals, pitchers who they felt had some upside, who they thought could work out during the season, and they could kind of get for cheap as they maybe rejuvenated their careers a little bit. You look back to last year, the Padres signed four guys: Trevor Cahill, Clayton Richard, Jolys Chacin, and Jared Weaver. Clayton Richard and Jolys Chacin were serviceable starters. Trevor Cahill, they were able to trade at the deadline and get something in return, and Jared Weaver ended up flopping. And so if they can sign four guys and three of them have three of them pan out this offseason, I think they'd be happy, especially considering their double A rotation is they're very high on some of their pitchers in double A. I think it's five of their top 15 prospects are in that rotation. I would not be surprised if two or three of those guys make the major leagues later in the season in 2018. And so if they could find some one-year guys, some guys who maybe have some upside. Joely Chafin last year was coming off injury, and the Padres are willing to take a chance on him, and he turned into a pretty reliable asset. So that kind of guy is, I think, who the Padres are looking for while they wait on some of their younger double-A guys like Cal Quantrill, Joey Lucchese, Eric Lauer. I think they're really excited to see some of those double-A guys get a chance in the major leagues, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens come September or potentially even earlier. I think they might get an invite to Major League spring training too, which could be exciting. And so for now, it seems like stopgap options. Joely Chafin, who pitched for the Padres in last season, as we mentioned, he's definitely one of them.
Yeah, the future is certainly getting closer for this Padres team as those young prospects make their way closer and closer to the big leagues. And that is interesting if some of those guys can get up by the end of the 2018 season. That'll do it for this edition of MLB.com Extras. It's been our Padres edition. For AJ Cassavale, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Rockies reporter, Thomas Harding. And Thomas, we actually have some breaking news to discuss here on the podcast. We're going to get into a little bit some other things, the big available pieces that are out there with Shohei Ohtani and Giancarlo Stanton and stuff like that. But some good news when you look back on the 2017 Rockies, one of the real bright standout players for that team as they made their run back to the postseason was Greg Holland, and he has been awarded the National League Comeback Player of the Year Award. So a cool thing for a guy who's currently not a Rocky but was obviously a big part of 2017. Just talk about looking back on a season in which he was tremendous. How much did he surprise you and how good he was when nobody really knew what to expect heading into the season?
Yeah, that was the key. No one knew what to expect, but when you looked at the contract they gave him, it was a one-year contract, but with a whole lot of incentives in it, and I think they really thought that he was okay. I mean, he was hurt toward the end of the 2015 season and then sat out all of 2016. So part of it was a matter of making sure he was healthy, and a lot of times, you know, when you first come back from it, you just don't know. But when I saw in spring training that he was able to bounce back from appearances, I'm like, okay, this guy is pretty healthy. Now, he never really got back the velocity that he had in Kansas City. It's something that whoever signs him, whether it's the Rockies or someone else, may be able to count on. But this is the thing that sticks out about Greg Holland's season. Rockies, going into the year, they really believed that they could compete, and they ended up going to the wild card game against the Diamondbacks, but almost no one else believed it. However, so when you're in a situation like that, I think that while the players believe they can because they haven't done it, you have to win some games or win some tight games early. Well, in April and May, Greg Holland was incredible. He was, 19 for 19 on saves in 21 games, 1.37 ERA. So what that did was, if you're the Rockies and you have a lead late in the game, you're not looking over your shoulder to see if the bullpen's going to blow it. As long as the game got to Greg Holland, it was in the bag, and that made a huge difference because, as you know, they struggled a bit in the second half and down the stretch, but all those wins that they got early really helped kind of build a little bit of a cushion to where even when they did struggle in the second half, they had enough to get to the playoffs. And Greg Holland had a terrible August, that's true. But he did bounce back toward the end of that month and into September and was one of the difference makers once again in them making the playoffs. The Milwaukee Brewers put a really strong push on at the end of the season. But Greg Holland rebounding then made a difference.
And that brings us to the fact that the Rockies currently don't really have a closer on the roster. Now, Holland is a possibility. I think it's going to probably cost more to bring him back and probably multiple years as well, as he's proven his health. Is there a decent chance they could bring him back? And if not, what type of reliever do they go after to fill that role?
Well, yeah, there's a decent chance. You know, there are some built-in advantages. A, he did well here, so Coors Field is not a detriment to him. Now, he will be looking for a multi-year deal, And the Rockies are one of those teams where, you know, you have to be a little bit leery of giving a closer a multi-year deal, because if he struggles and your team kind of falls apart, that's a lot of money going to one guy. But they do like Greg Holland a lot. However, you know, when you're looking at it, the entire free agent market, I know they're looking. One thing that I'm wondering if they can do, I know that Alex Colome of the Tampa Bay Rays has been linked to the St. Louis Cardinals, but I really believe he's the type of guy that the Rockies could go after. You know, there's some control for a few years of him. It doesn't really get out of hand, and he's the strikeout type guy that the Rockies need. They love guys who strike people out, simply because putting a ball in play at Coors Field, even mishit balls, can be trouble there. So I'm going to put that on the list, but they've been linked to Brandon Kinsler and Wade Davis, and I'm sure that they've made calls on several others who are out there. But Holland makes a lot of sense to come back, but I would think that given how they do things, Colome has 3 years of club control, and that's really important to the Rockies because they never want their salaries to get out of hand. I would not be surprised if they didn't get Greg Holland back if they made a trade for someone like a Colome.
Yeah, he'd make a lot of sense financially. That's a really good point. Now, the big storyline in the offseason so far, well, really there's two of them, Giancarlo Stanton and Shohei Ohtani. But as we record this podcast on Friday afternoon, we just heard news a little bit ago that it was officially ratified, the plan as far as Japan and Major League Baseball and the Players Union, as far as how players can be posted, and that clears the way for Ohtani to be posted probably at some point today. That will open up a three-week window when he can talk to, he can talk to 29 Major League Baseball teams about playing for them, and money will not be the overriding factor because it's $20 million to his team in Japan and then whatever teams have in their international funds. Now, I know the Rockies aren't at the top of that list as far as international pool money, but if the Rockies were to make a pitch to Shohei Ohtani, because certainly a guy that could fit in at the top of rotation and play a little bit of outfield if needed would be a nice fit in Colorado. What do you think the pitch from the Rockies would be to try to woo the Babe Ruth of Japan?
Yeah, if I'm the Colorado Rockies, maybe I don't have the money that some of the other teams do to pursue Ohtani, but I would go to him with this pitch. You could be a revolutionary player. I know that a lot of the American League teams want him as a starting pitcher and a designated hitter, but how about this? A guy that could really make a difference to a bullpen. I mean, you could start him in the outfield or at first base. Move him to the mounds for certain matchups during the game, then move him back to his position. There are just wonderful things that you could do with him. And he could play every day. He could pitch often and have an impact on games rather than once every 5 days as a starter and then figuring out how it fits in the rest of it. He could be a factor on your roster every single day. That would be the pitch that I would make to him, that not only could he be a star, and I know he's talked about being a two-way player and wants to hold on to that, he could be a revolutionary two-way player, and that would be the pitch I'd make.
I like it. I like that pitch. Now, he also, swinging in the thin air of Colorado, that would be a decent situation for him as well. And speaking of that, I know there's no rumors out there about the Rockies trying to make a trade for Giancarlo Stanton, and that contract in no way fits into the way Colorado is built right now. That being said, have you ever thought about what it would be like to watch Giancarlo Stanton have 81 home games at Coors Field, Thomas?
I tell you what, if I'm the Colorado Rockies, Giancarlo Stanton, or any fan of the home run, I would love to have him at Coors Field for 81 games. Are you kidding me? He has hit some colossal bombs there. And you know what? I wonder if the Rockies could swing a deal for him, because right now the Marlins are trying to get rid of the money. Now, what you'd have to do is probably talk Stanton into some sort of relinquishing of some years, maybe later down the road, or maybe Major League Baseball can get involved and help out. I mean, because I think baseball would love to see a guy come here and set records. But I want to kind of turn it a little bit differently. The rumors right now have the Giants being the obvious team, with the Cardinals also having looked at the Marlins. But if that deal goes down with the Giants, and one of the names has come up is Joe Panik going to the Marlins, but if somehow the deal happens without trading D. Gordon to the Giants, if I'm the Rockies, I take a look at that. D. Gordon, there is cost certainty with him. Now, granted, there's the current second baseman, excellent player, D.J. LeMahieu. Certainly, this is not a thing of get rid of D.J. LeMahieu, but he's in his last year of arbitration, could be a free agent next year. D. Gordon is signed for a few years down the road. What if you were able to get D. Gordon in here? Now, he would not be the leadoff hitter because you have Charlie Blackman, and I think Charlie Blackman, to me, is an ideal leadoff hitter because he gets on base for the simple fact that people are afraid to throw him strikes because the ball can end up over the fence. But could you imagine D. Gordon hitting second behind Charlie Blackman with the speed and the ability to hit to all fields? And he's a good on base. He's developed into a pretty good on base guy, and he plays second base. And where that could help you down the road is, say that Charlie Blackman, who also is in his last year of arbitration, say that he goes elsewhere, then D. Gordon becomes your leadoff hitter. So that's a creative and probably a bit crazy trade idea that I have just sitting here playing around on the computer. But, hey, this is the time of year for that kind of stuff.
I like it. I like it a lot. And the fact is that the Marlins are probably looking to get rid of more salary than just Stanton. So we've heard other names, Yelich and Gordon and Marcelo Ozuna, as guys that could also be dealt. So who knows? That'd be neat. It'd be neat seeing him in Colorado on a team like that. So good stuff, as always. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Rockies edition. For Thomas Harding, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Dodgers reporter, Ken Gernick. And, Ken, the big two stories right now that seem to be kind of holding up the baseball world are, of course, Giancarlo Stanton and Shohei Ohtani. When you talk about this Dodgers team, Stanton, it seems like, wants to be a Dodger. It came out this week that he sent his list to the Marlins of teams he'd like to play for, and the Dodgers on the list and supposedly at the top of that list. The problem for Stanton, I think, is that at this point, the Dodgers aren't really interested, right, in considering how much money there is and where they are with the luxury tax. It doesn't seem like the Dodgers hold the same interest in Stanton that Stanton has in the Dodgers.
Right. I mean, you know, any team has interest in Stanton. They'd love to get the player. But that contract is, you know, kind of off the charts. So, you know, and then you're going to have to give up players probably to get him. So, you know, he just doesn't fit into the way the Dodgers have been run since Guggenheim has taken over. They haven't gone after players that require nine-figure contracts. So, and people forget that not only would they be taking on potentially $300 million on his contract, they're in luxury tax range. So you can add another $150 million onto that. So, you know, you're talking about almost a half $1 billion, you know, to pick up this guy. And, you know, they only lost the World Series by one game. You know, half $1 billion for one win is, you know, pretty high price to pay. So, you know, it's Ohtani seems to be the guy that they've been focused on really for months. You know, they sent a group, including Andrew Friedman, to watch him throw bullpens. That tells you the height of their interest. So that seems to be their target, not Stanton. Like I said, any team would love to have Stanton, but that contract makes him almost radioactive to most teams, even teams with deep pockets like the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's a good point. And the fact is that in order to not have to take on as much payroll, you'd have to give up more in prospects. And the Dodgers, with the current front office, of course, value that young talent, value those prospects, and have only really gone into that system and traded away prospects when it really was a perfect fit. And you mentioned it. Not only were they so close to winning the World Series, but when you look at the flaws or shorter comings of this roster, outfield wasn't really part of it, and right field seemed to be in pretty good shape, although Puig will eventually be a free agent. So that brings us to Ohtani, and you mentioned him, obviously. He's a player that when you look at this Dodgers roster and where they can improve, obviously any team, I think, can improve with Ohtani. Where would he slot in? From what you've heard, if the Dodgers were able to go out and get him, as far as pitching goes, where do you think he would slot into a Dodger rotation?
Well, the beauty of the Dodger rotation for Ohtani is that they wouldn't be expecting him to be the ace, as some teams might be. They have depth, so they could ease him into a transition. You know, he's used to pitching really once a week in the Japanese style, and the Dodgers could go to a six-man rotation or something similar to that keeping Clayton Kershaw, on his normal cycle. But with all the extra arms that the Dodgers have starting pitchers, and they have a lot of 3, 4, and 5 starting pitchers, they can move him around and make his adjustment probably easier than it would be with most clubs.
It sounds like Friday is the day where the clock kind of starts ticking with Ohtani. The agreement has been reached as far as the Players Association and Japan and Major League Baseball for how this will go down, but it needs to be officially put into place. That's expected to happen on Friday. From there, basically it's 3 weeks, a three-week window where Ohtani will be able to figure out where he is going to head. And obviously every team in Major League Baseball is interested because it's not going to cost as much as you would think a talent like him would cost. They'll only have to give up the small amount of bonus money and then the $20 million to Japan. So everybody will be involved. But for a lot of reasons, it sounds like the Dodgers are expected to be one of the front runners. You mentioned where he would fit as far as pitching goes. Would he get a chance to hit when he's not pitching with the Dodgers?
Well, I mean, I don't know that he would sign unless he had that,
right,
from what I hear. So, I guess that's an automatic, or he doesn't sign. So, and obviously the Dodgers would be going up against some American League teams that could, fit him in as a designated hitter. So to that extent, I think the Dodgers have that hurdle to clear with him, is that they would have to come to some agreement with him, satisfy his desire to be a hitter. And, while the Dodgers have outfielders, they certainly, they had a platoon in left field. They basically moved a backup shortstop to center field. And Puig, he's coming off a real good year, but he's been erratic. So you never seem to know what you're going to get with Puig. So, if Ohtani is a legitimate major league hitter, and from all indications are he can be, then I'm sure that if he's going to hit 20, 30 home runs, they'll find a spot for him. Who wouldn't?
Obviously, the pitch to Ohtani by all Major League Baseball teams is kind of an all-around thing. It's going to talk about him getting a chance to hit, as you said, a chance to pitch, obviously. But there's a lot more to it than that. There's lifestyle. There's the move to a new country. How much does being on the West Coast, in your mind, help out the Dodgers?
Well, I think the West Coast is part of it, but I think, a bigger part is the fact that the Dodgers have had so many Asian players, specifically pitchers, that have come here and thrived, going all the way back to Hideo Nomo and currently Kenta Maeda and, Korean Hyunjin Ryu. So they're familiar with making these transitions, these cultural adjustments in adapting to making the player feel comfortable and not forcing him to make the adjustment into a major league style. They kind of recraft the team around the player, at least to transition him in, and they've been successful doing it. Of course, the Yankees have done the same thing, and they've had their share of Japanese pitchers, and they've thrived there too. So, to me, it seems like if that is a factor, and I would think it would be, the comfort level of Ohtani coming over, there's a track record that both of those organizations, and add in Texas Rangers, because they've done it too, so with Darvish, and so I think that you've got three teams right there that that box is checked off as far as past performance of Japanese pitchers coming in and making that adjustment and being comfortable and thriving.
Yeah, and those are the three front runners, it seems like, although we don't really know anything, and we'll learn a lot more as we go forward, starting from Friday, as he starts to meet with teams and all of that. And this could be a fascinating story that's going to continue on for the better part of another month, or it could be over in a few days once that window opens. We will see. I would think it'll at least hopefully carry us into winter meetings, and we'll have plenty of drama to talk about here on the podcast and around with the hot stove. All right, some other things I wanted to touch on with you, Ken. Adrian Gonzalez, when you look at how last year ended with the injuries and where he fits on this roster, it doesn't seem like he's a perfect fit going forward with a huge contract. He also has a full no-trade clause, and he would be hard to trade anyway. So I guess my question for a guy who has really been such a solid part of that Dodgers team since he came over in the trade with the Red Sox, what are the chances that he's on this roster come opening day?
Yeah, maybe zero.
You know,
I don't see it. They may feel like they're stuck with him, but you know, it didn't end well, obviously, not only the injury, but there were some hard feelings about him leaving the country during the postseason, and they've tried to kind of patch that up. But, you know, with Cody Bellinger, you know, as long as he's healthy, he looks like the first baseman for, you know, for the next 6 years. So, you know, they can move him to the outfield. Of course, if they get an Ohtani, then that kind of closes off, you know, some playing time out there for Bellinger. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they either find a way to trade him or, you know, even release him and eat the salary. I know that's probably the last option and one that they don't want to take. But I think you said it in the beginning. He's really no longer a fit for this team.
Yeah, maybe if you trade him, you still have to pick up a chunk of that salary, but not the entire $21.5 million, and maybe that helps the cause a little bit. All right, another guy who finished up maybe his Dodgers career with the World Series is Andre Ethier. He kind of ended on a better note then. Obviously, couple of big hits in the postseason, came back for the last month of the season and had some moments. There were reports this week that he had decided to retire, but then, Ken, those were quickly shot down. Ethier saying that he intends to play in 2018, but is there any chance that he would be a Dodger in 2018?
Well, you know, I guess there's 1 in 30 chance. So, you know, I mean, you know, anything's possible. And a year ago, it looked like Chase Utley was leaving, and then they re-signed him. So, yeah, I think it's possible, but, you know, he's a left-handed hitting part-time outfielder. Well, they've got a lot of those right now. Jock Peterson, Andrew Tolles, you know, whether Bellinger plays out there, Ohtani. I mean, you know, I just don't know, you know, that there will be room for him. But I think there is something to be said for having a clutch bat. Left-hander off the bench, whether it's the Dodgers or somewhere else, he seems and he doesn't mind the moment. You know, if it's the World Series, it doesn't really matter. He'll give you a quality at bat. So there's going to be some interest in him, whether it's full-time, part-time, bench role, you know, and a possible comeback to the Dodgers. But you know, I would say right now it doesn't look like that's likely.
One more thing to touch on with you, Ken. No baseball being played at Dodger Stadium right now, but there is a museum going on, a pop-up museum celebrating 60 years of the Dodgers in Los Angeles. You have a story on the website about it. What can fans look forward to seeing if they're going to head over to the ballpark?
Well, it's there's a lot of throwback, you know, a lot of history there, uniforms of past players, and you know, Fernando and Koufax and Drysdale and Garvey. It's the Dodgers, I would say, since the Guggenheim people have taken over, they have really tried to turn Dodger Stadium into a museum with their great history, you know, going back to the Brooklyn days. And the O'Malley family has donated a lot of memorabilia. And some local collectors, Richard Levy is one who's done that. There's gloves, bats, lineup cards. It's worth taking a look if you're in the area, and it'll be on display into spring training. So if you're in the LA area and you really care about Dodger history, it's definitely worth a visit.
Great stuff, Ken. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Dodgers edition. For Ken Gernick, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.